Hello, everybody. Welcome back to This Weird House Podcast. I am, as always, Nick Boddick, and today we have a very special guest, a guy I'm having the pleasure of talking to for the second time, and the first time on this one. He is the host of the Lovecraft E-Zine Podcast. He is Mr. Mike Davis. How you doing, Mike?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad we're finally able to make it work. It was all on my end. Like that, it's been a wild few weeks.
It wasn't all on your end. One time was on my end, at least.
Oh, we're here now. That's what matters. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, man, a basic, kind of a baseline question I ask everybody that I have on is just how did you discover horror? When did the genre make itself known to you? Was it movies, books? Just kind of give me the Mike Davis history of horror.
Well, I guess I'd have to say, if I'm looking back, I read a lot of science fiction and novels growing up. I didn't really get into horror until I was old enough to have a car and get away from home, and I was going to video stores and so forth. And, you know, got to walking in the horror section, and they looked interesting. I didn't have a TV or growing up, or we weren't allowed to go to movies. So it was kind of my first introduction to horror. Obviously, I knew what it was and about the genre and everything, but I just hadn't paid any attention to it.
Right.
And then, I don't know, it's kind of fuzzy. I mean, it was, 40 years ago. But, you know, from that point, I just... I think I noticed those Michael Whelan covers, Lovecraft covers,
yep,
in a bookstore, and went from there as far as Lovecraft goes. And general horror, gosh, I don't think that Lovecraft was my introduction. I think that I just thought, okay, I'm enjoying these movies, and I think I'll read some books too. So,
yeah, for sure.
But I don't have a solid answer for you because it's been a while.
Yeah, no, it's all good. It seems to be most people's transition from, first it's movies. I've found that is the most common answer is movies to mm-hmm. books. And, next was, I was going to ask you, obviously you're very associated with Lovecraft, and so when you discover Lovecraft, what is it about his work that grabs you as it did? I presume, considering you have a podcast about his work, I assume you're something of a fan.
Well, yeah, I enjoy his work. I don't know if I'd have a beer with the guy. In fact, I know I would not.
Yeah,
but,
same.
Whoa, Monty. My cat is about to pull down the whole system here. You know, I started the magazine in 2011, and even then, I love some of the Lovecraft stories, but I'm more into general cosmic horror, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Stories that others have written in the cosmic horror vein and in the weird fiction vein. But, you know, titling something the cosmic horror magazine or whatever, I thought Lovecraft would get a hook in people's mind.
Yeah.
And so I went that route. So to me, it's just sort of a base. It's just a starting point. And on my podcast, we talk about cosmic horror and weird fiction and all kinds of horror, really. And interview all kinds of horror writers. But, you know, mainly in the weird fiction vein.
Yeah. So what is it about weird fiction then that, and you know, cosmic in general that attracted you so much to it over, say, some other, over paranormal or psychological or stuff like that?
Well, I think part of it is just there's this feeling of awe with the horror too, you know, this feeling that things are far bigger than we know or can know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, it strikes me that that's actually kind of close to the way that it really is. I mean, I like astronomy, and it's, I'm sure most people know that we're just one small planet in one solar system in a galaxy of about 400 billion stars, and there's supposedly around 400 billion galaxies in the universe. And I don't think it's something that people think about a lot, but it's microscopic. And so the thought that the universe doesn't care about us, and if Earth disappeared tomorrow, the universe wouldn't even notice, all of that is actually a really reality, you know? And so part of it, actually, funny as it is to say, struck me as realistic, you know, not Cthulhu or all that, but just the idea, the immensity of it, and also the feeling of discovering something behind the curtain or realizing that there's something behind the curtain. Lovecraft wrote a story with R.H. Barlow called The Night Ocean. And if you read that story, that is my favorite kind of weird fiction story. And because the narrator, he starts to get this feeling that there is something going on, but he never quite figures out what it is. And I can't do the story justice, but that's an example I hold up as to what kind of horror that I like.
It's weird you mentioned that. I've been getting into the I don't know if it's a podcast or YouTube channel, both, but Horror Babble, they do a ton of,
Oh, yeah.
yeah, they do. I mean, they have tons and tons of story narrations, and The Night Ocean is one I listened to just a few weeks ago, actually, when I first started kind of sifting through their catalog. Yeah, that's a really good one. I've never really thought about cosmic horror being realistic in that sense, but that's really interesting because you said not a lot of people think about the insignificance of, or not even necessarily insignificance, but just the grand scale, the microscopic scope, I suppose. As you said, I think about that all the time, and I have weekly existential crises. And I say that in like a joking tone, but like I really do, like I think about that all the time, and it is scary. And
Like what kind of crisis, if you don't mind me asking,
just like
in relation to this?
so I guess it's not like so the whole insignificance in the face of just this grander stage, I suppose, is something I think about a lot. What I really have existential crises of is, I'd say it's connected but different kind of, it's like the concept of forever is something that really like troubles me. And when I think about what's going to happen, you know, God willing, not for a long time, but when I die and the likelihood of there being absolutely nothing, the concept of how long there will be nothing is something that I can't fathom. Like I can't, no matter how many different ways I try to look at it, let's say. So I've been alive now for 35 years. And then, so let's say lights out tomorrow. From there, it's my entire life so far. But then it's that again. And then take that number and it's exponentially growing. And then, so then let's say the sun burns out, right? And the universe implodes in on itself. And then that happens a billion more times, and that's only this much of how long it'll be, but not even this much because it's never end. Like I feel it in my stomach right now, just like just talking about it. Like it's, I've.
Well, I'll tell you what. This will give you a real existential crisis when
Bring
you
it
watch
on.
this. There is a video on YouTube called Time Lapse of the Future, A Journey to the End of Time. It's a really good video and very realistic look at what is likely to happen the further, the more that time goes on. And It's actually got like 103 million views. It's amazing.
Oof.
But one thing that struck, many things struck me in that video. I've watched it a couple times and I'm due for a rewatch, but one thing that really struck me is that when all life ends in the universe, when the universe is no longer habitable for any type of life, that is just a small percentage of how long the universe will continue.
Yeah.
Or in the way that I think they put it, for most of the life of the universe, nothing will, no life will exist.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, you'll like this. Yeah, make sure it's time lapse of the future, a journey to the end of time.
Time lapse of the future. Yeah, it sounds similar to, there's a Wikipedia page that is like timeline of the far future, I think is what it's called. And yeah, it's basically, it sounds like what this is, but just printed and different. It's like what's going to happen in a million years and 10 million years and, you know, however many. And yeah, it's...
Well, what I like about it is they show it very realistically, you know, using CGI and all that.
Yeah.
It's a really good video. But that's the other part of cosmic horror, right? It's not just the insignificance in space. It's also the insignificance in time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the planet Earth, the universe has been around almost 14 billion years. Planet Earth has been around 4 billion years. And, excuse me, I'm kind of stuffed up today. You know, modern man has been around for a microsecond of that time.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So, you know, humans like to think that everything is about them, but it really isn't. And yeah, that's part of the draw of cosmic horror, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, when you think about it from that perspective, it's like all the... So obviously, like, all our interpersonal issues that we might have, like an issue I'm having with a coworker, for random example, seems insignificant. But then even like on the world stage, like all the issues, like looking at those when compared to everything else around it is, yeah, man, that's...
Well, two things actually might help you. The first thing is that are the doings of ants and the way that go about their lives, is that insignificant to us? Yeah, it is. Unless they ruin my picnic. But it's not insignificant to them. So yeah, on a cosmic scale, Earth may not matter, but for the brief time that we're here, you know, our relationships, our friendships, all that matters to us.
Right.
And that's what we have to remember. And I think what goes hand in hand with this, at least for me, is not a feeling of, oh, nothing matters, so just do whatever the hell you want, no matter who you hurt. It's rather the opposite. It's, we're all kind of stuck on this sinking ship together, so we should try to make it as easy for each other as we can, as friendly, you know. It's about what you do today to make somebody's life just a little bit better, whether it's a smile or, you know, something much huger on a grander scale. Yeah. And the other thing is, when you think about, you mentioned all of that time when you are after you die and all that nothingness for all of that time. What you have to remember is you've already experienced it. You experienced it before you were born for about 14 billion years and it didn't hurt you anything. So
I've never thought about that. That the response I get from 99% of people I talk to about this is that, like, oh, well, you won't even know what's happening. But that's actually, I haven't thought about it coming from the other end. Like before, I only think about it in terms of after I've already existed. That's really interesting.
Well, whatever you experienced before you were born, which is nothing, is exactly what you'll experience after you die. and neither one of them hurt you. You, as you say, you weren't aware of either, but yeah, I think that does, well, you won't be aware of it. Maybe helps a little bit, but just realizing that you've already been through it.
Yeah.
Is,
that actually,
that's a game changer to me.
That really actually is kind of a game changer. Oh man.
That's good to hear.
You know how many people I've talked to about this and I've made no progress on it? That's a really interesting way to look at it. It's weirdly like optimistic in like a roundabout way. Man, that got a little heavy. Was not expecting that. So kind of to circle back around, you touched briefly on starting the magazine, and I kind of wanted to go a little more in depth in that. And then kind of from there, how the podcast came about. So what prompted you back in, I think you said 2011, to start your own kind of outlet?
Well, I was in real estate for a long time, and then I got sick, a chronic illness, and that resulted in some financial difficulties for my wife and me. And after a while, you know, my wife's sister said, why don't you come down here? They lived in a small town in Texas, and live with us for a few months while you get back on your feet. And my wife got a job down here, and basically, you know, I was going to be, and I was, Mr. Stay-at-home dad. But then, you know, I'd been thinking about this for a while. It's not anything that I ever had the time for. But when we moved down here, I thought, okay, now this is a good time to do this. And the other thing that motivated me was I was reading some really great cosmic horror and some really great weird fiction in anthologies. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if somebody could read a story of this quality just in an online magazine for free? And so that was kind of the starting point. Huh. And I don't think issue one is anything to write home about, but it got better and better and better, I think. And I mean, there are still a lot of free stories to read on the Lovecraft E-Zine website.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other part of this was just realizing how the friendships that I was making, lucky enough to be making, with people like Joe Pulver and Willem Pugmire and Pete Rolick and many others. And, you know, we had all these email threads and everything. And I said, wouldn't it be great if we could all be in the same room together? We can't, but the next best thing is, you know, at the time, Google Chat, let's just hang out in a video chat room together and talk. And pretty soon that turned into, it kind of evolved without me really thinking about it. It turned into recording them for other people who, so they could enjoy them too.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it sort of morphed into, I started interviewing other writers and creative people. And then after a while, I realized, this is a podcast. It's a video podcast. And someone said to me that they loved it, but they wished it was, that they could listen to it in their car, you know. So I was a little resistant, but then I realized what he was saying made sense. So I started uploading the audio editions of these episodes to, you know, everywhere, Spotify, Apple, all those places.
Yeah.
So it kind of evolved naturally. I never really sat down and thought and to think, I want to create a podcast. It sort of happened, but once I realized it was happening, I wanted to make it better and better.
Right, kind of leaned into it.
Yeah, and the magazine, it's a lot of work to publish a magazine. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of stories to read, a lot of things to do. I went from monthly to quarterly, and you know, it was just too much. So I had the magazine portion of it going for about 5 years. And then I said, I'm just going to pause this for a while. And still paused until now, actually. I'm going to be publishing just a story on the website every once in a while. Nothing like a 5 stories a month magazine. Yeah. Like Cosmic Horror Monthly, they're doing a great job.
Yeah,
Nothing like that.
I just signed up for them. I got a few.
Oh, did you?
A few copies. Yeah, they're putting out some good stuff.
Yeah, they really are. And you know, made the decision to just keep concentrating on the podcast and promoting other creative people.
Yeah. So. Let me just say, like, when I was first getting into, so I've been writing for, God, it's been close to 9 years now. That's crazy to think about. But when I first really started getting into cosmic horror and Lovecraftian, weird fiction, all that, it is almost solely because of the Lovecraft Easian podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nice to hear.
I was very well versed in all the other aspects of horror. But I was listening to the podcast, and then in the time since then, and all that I've read within those genres, it made me realize how, like, there was a huge drop off in what I was familiar with in terms of horror in that kind of that corner of it. I really knew nothing about it. It was that ever since I started listening to your podcast, I would still refer to myself as just a horror author, but I am a horror author now who, my arena is pretty much firmly in the cosmic area. And I probably have you to thank for that. So thanks.
That's
first
nice
off
of you to say. Thank you.
Yeah. Listening to some of those conversations is incredible that you have. One of the first episodes I listened to was with, John Padgett. And he did this show a few months back. He's an awesome dude. From there I just started consuming as much of your show as I could. And then when I was actually on your show, that's where I was leading to here, is that was just such like a, I was like, oh my God, yes, I've made it. Like, this is it. This is what we've been working towards.
You're gonna give me a big head, but thank you for saying that. That made my day. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. It's just the truth, man. Like, I've learned a lot from your show and done a lot because of your show.
It's one of the biggest reasons, main reasons why it's good is the people who are on it. You know, the other panelists and then the guests and all these people are so knowledgeable and so willing to share that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not just share the knowledge and discuss things, but to be part of a community.
Yeah.
You know, and though I was not thinking about a podcast or anything near it when I started the e-zine, my secondary goal was to create a community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just, in the back of my mind, I thought it would be like on a forum on a website somewhere,
right,
like a message board or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is more immediate.
Yeah, so. No, definitely. It's having listened to, I feel like you have the longevity of your podcast is such that, like, when I listen to it, it's like I'm having a conversation, or, you know, listening to a conversation that I'm just not participating in, which I know on a literal sense is exactly what I'm doing. But, like, I know there's like a familiarity there, and like it does feel like community in a very cool way that I think I don't get that from a lot of other, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to mostly comedy podcasts, and there's not that sense of community, even though they are talking about a subject that I am very interested in. So yeah, I'd say mission accomplished.
Thank you. I wanted people to feel like, you know, literally they're hanging out with friends.
Yeah.
You know, so the other thing I would say is that guys like Joel Pulver and Rick Lay, who have died, and I miss those guys very much. But I'm also grateful that there are hundreds of hours of these guys talking on my podcast over the years.
Yes.
So that's, you know, they're not only living through the work that they created, but you can hear them speak there and watch them speak. You know, I need to put together another playlist on the YouTube channel, you know, of for Joe and Rick, but it's just one of those things that there's always things to get done, you know.
Right. Yeah. The to-do list is never ending.
Right.
Yeah. And Joseph Pulver actually is, his episodes, or not that he only has a few, but like I love the ones where he is specifically taught. He seemed to be the one human being on the planet who was most knowledgeable about the King in Yellow. And
that's for sure.
Yeah. And I love the King in Yellow. The whole book, I love Repairer of Reputations, start to finish, everything. I love that book. And, yeah, so whenever he talked about that, I always get hyped when he talked about that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting mythos in it. You've probably read the anthologies that have been done with that theme. And then, you know, you get into some, not all, but some, for example, cursed movie or lost movie tropes and themes. Yes. And that seems to fit into The King in Yellow very well for some reason. There's actually one by, I'm trying to remember it. Yeah, I blank on things a lot.
All good. Me too, man.
it's a very good book about, that has the theme of the King in Yellow and that Carcosa is mentioned and so forth. And it's about this filmmaker that went missing. Memento Mori.
Yeah, yes. By Brian Hauser. Maybe that might not be the right name.
I know it's Brian.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Memento Mori, The Fathomless Shadows by Brian Hauser. You're right.
Yeah.
Good memory.
Thanks. Yeah, I love that book, dude.
Yeah, for your listeners, gosh, if you guys haven't read this, you should.
It's incredible. Really, yeah, that's probably, I put that next to The Final Reconciliation by Todd Kiesling as my favorite entries into the the King in Yellow mythos. Both of those did really cool things with the concepts that the Chambers put out there.
Yeah, what's the name of Todd's book? I've had him on, I've read his books, but...
Yeah, it's called The Final Reconciliation.
The Final Reconciliation. I was going to write it down, but my cat knocked my pen away. So I'm going to just...
Story of my life. This is an 11 cat podcast that we're having right now. Just for all my listeners out there, all two of you.
Yeah.
The between Mike and I, we have 11 cats. And for the first time, I am not the one with the most cats.
Oh, Final Reconciliation is only $2.99 on Kindle right now.
Oh, nice. Well, it is absolutely worth it. All of Todd's stuff is.
But... No, it definitely is.
Yeah.
It's just hard to get to everything.
Oh, you know? For sure. My TBR pile is miles high at this point.
Yeah, mine too. Print and digital.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, man. Like right behind this partition here, I have a mountain of books that is just about waist high, and Kimmy is not thrilled that we basically run out of space in our place, and I keep buying books.
Yeah, I hear that a lot from every guy that talks about this on my show, and from my wife too. And she's very, very happy. We moved here a year ago to this house. She's extremely happy that it came with a finished, I guess it's, you call it a barn. It's about the size of a one-car garage.
Oh, nice. And that's awesome.
It's got AC and heat and insulation and all that. It's really nice. They did a good job. The owner did, and she's really glad that I'm out here with all those books, so she doesn't have to worry about them cluttering up the house.
We're in the process of trying to find a house now, and the biggest boon that we're gonna get from having a house is the just increased space, because it's like everything is closing in on us right now. It's like the like every holiday, every birthday, like there's just more and more, and we're pretty soon we're just gonna like we're gonna be hoarders without even trying to hoard. Right. We're gonna be like one of
It's
those
easy to do,
newspaper
and
houses.
yeah, it's easy to get into that in an apartment, I mean, we've been living in an apartment for years, and we're lucky to have this place, so.
That's awesome, man. So speaking of TBR piles, what are you currently reading?
Let's see here. I pull some of them up. Okay, I'm reading. I'm almost done with Good Night, Sleep Tight by Brian Evanson. That's a brand new collection.
I just saw him post about that one.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and I'm gonna have him on the podcast next Wednesday. I'm rereading some Charles Grant, which is he's kind of like a comfort food writer for me. Nightmare Seasons, that book. It's a book of four novellas that are they're intertwined, let's say, I guess is the best way to put it. And I usually am in the middle of a lot of books at one time, just because I'm moody. I'm reading an interesting book. Well, you could say it's horror, you could say it's not. In some ways, it's not fiction, but it's called A Thousand Naked Strangers by Kevin Hazard, and it's about this guy who becomes an EMT in, I think it's Atlanta, Georgia, and all of this, the weird crap that happens on the job as he's learning, and everything, and just the things that would, if most people knew this stuff happened or could happen, they'd be really freaked out.
Oh,
So,
sorry, what was it called again? A thousand.
A Thousand Naked Strangers by Kevin Hazard, HAZZARD.
Paramedics Wild Ride. I'm definitely gonna check that one out. That sounds. I love stuff like that.
Yeah,
It's.
it's a really good book. Well, you like cosmic horror, so I just started this, Cosmovorus by R.C. Housen, and it's really good. Cosmovorous. It's set in the 90s.
Cosmoboris, R.C. Housen. All right, that's another one.
As always, I'm in the middle of some science books and nonfiction books. So.
the only I've been trying to read more nonfiction, but I always have. I'm pretty sure I've talked about this on this show before, but like I have to be so careful about what I read and what I watch and what video games I play because I'm trying to write another novel right now. And whether it's a novel or a short story, whenever I'm actively writing stuff, which I guess is pretty much always, but whenever I have a specific like goal in mind as far as what I want to accomplish with writing, I am so influenced by what I'm taking in, that it will almost certainly color what I'm writing. So like I there's so many things I want to read, but I can't right now because I'm trying to write a book of a certain style. And I find it impossible to like divorce the two, and it sucks.
Do you have to though? I mean, there's nothing wrong with other types of writing being an influence in other types of fictional situations.
So, and I definitely like do acknowledge that, and I'm fine with taking influence into it, but it'll get to the point where, well, for me, it's to the point where if I am writing a story about, I'm writing a cosmic horror story, let's say, but then I start to read Stolen Tongues by Felix Blackwell, shout out to Felix, like I will want to write a story more like a Cabin in the Woods story, which has absolutely nothing to do with this thing that I'm working on now. So like that's what I mean. And it's to the point where I'll lose interest in what I'm currently working on because I'm like, oh no, this will be better to do. Cause I am so bad at staying on a single project, and that's with writing and reading. So yeah, it's kind of annoying. But it is what it is. I'm used to it at this point. So being as well versed in cosmic horror as you are, what are some live action or I guess any kind of adaptations that you feel have gotten it right? Or, you know, what are your favorite Lovecraft adaptations or just cosmic horror in general?
Well, I've got a big list of movies that I like on the website.
That's right.
Just to name a couple of them. One of my favorites is actually the first on the list because it's alphabetical. Absentia. This was Mike Flanagan. First movie.
Yeah.
I actually interviewed him about it back in the day before he was famous.
No kidding.
He was very pleased to learn that I thought it was Lovecraftian because he said he was really into Lovecraft. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Maybe we'll get a Lovecraftian Mike Flanagan series or movie someday. That would be cool because he'd do it right.
Yo, I agree. He's one of those that just give him the keys. I trust him to drive.
Right. Let's see. Cigarette Burns, although it may be more Carcosa mythos.
Cigarette Burns.
One of those is a John Carpenter story. It's an anthology.
Okay, Masters of Horror.
Yeah, Masters of Horror.
Okay,
but
so
the the John Carpenter movie, if you're that into the King in Yellow, you'll really, really like it.
Okay.
Really like it.
You know, I think I must have seen this because I remember watching Masters of Horror way back when, but I do not remember this at all. That's awesome. Ooh, it gives me an excuse to go back and rewatch all of them. That's hell yeah.
Of course, Dagon is a great adaptation of The Shadow over Innsmouth.
Oh yeah.
Dark City, of course. That's definitely cosmic horror. I'm just naming a few from here. The Empty Man is a more recent one.
Yes, 2020. That was such a sleep. They marketed that movie so poorly. I went into it with low expectations, and I like everything I watch. That sounds like an exaggeration. There are very few movies, shows, whatever I can point to where I found nothing redeeming about them. I'm very easy to please. And I went into that not expecting much because I don't usually put a lot of stock into reviews, but I saw a lot of people saying like they were responding to what they expected the movie to be based on the marketing. And I kind of let myself get swept into that in terms of setting my expectations. So when I saw it, I was like, holy crap, this is an outstanding, like, Lovecraftian story.
And it was definitely a dark horse. An older one and a favorite, Horror Express, with Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. And heavy hitters in some places, but not too much. And just, you know, John dies at the end. The Last Wave, I think, is kind of cosmic horror.
The Last Wave.
The Midnight Meat Train, if somebody wants something more recent.
Yeah. 2008. I love that one. Clive Barker.
Yeah. Oh, here's a good one if you haven't seen it. This is one of my favorites. The New Daughter stars Kevin Costner. And that's, I wouldn't say cosmic horror, I'd say Lovecraftian.
Okay. The Last Daughter.
It's not an adaptation, but it's just a real good Lovecraftian story.
Huh, it's from 2009, huh?
Yeah, it's actually adapted from a short story by John Connolly in his collection Nocturnes.
Okay, yeah, I'm familiar with John Connolly.
Yeah, so there's just a few. Yeah, he's a good horror writer. He's mostly known for the Charlie Parker detective series.
Yeah.
But he's written other things as well.
Huh. Yeah, I think I was only familiar with him from the Charlie Parker, which of those, I think I only read maybe part of the first one, but not because they weren't good or anything. I was just not in the mood for that kind of thing at the time. But huh, that's awesome.
The last one, I won't go down a big list here, but here's my last one. The Vast of Night, you probably saw.
The Vast of Night.
Premiered in 2019 on Amazon Prime.
I don't.
And it's set in the late 50s. Let's see. One night in New Mexico in the late 1950s, a switchboard operator and a radio DJ discover a strange audio frequency which could change the future forever. And do yourself a favor on this one. Don't read anything about it. Just, well, all of them actually. Go into them cold.
All right.
And there's one point where the protagonists track down this old lady who might have some answers. And they hear this alien language coming from in her house. And I think this is an amazing movie because even just hearing that it was deeply unsettling, you know. And then after I found out what it was, even more so. But to think about how good you have to be to craft a few paragraphs in a fictional language and not just, you know, it's not like creating Klingon or something. You're trying to make it sound as unsettling as possible. I don't know how they did it, but they did.
Yeah, that's fictional linguistics is... Linguistics, period, is one of my favorite topics. My fiance did a linguistics class a few years ago. She jokes that I basically have a linguistics credit now because I was just... Like, my ultimate goal as a writer is to just create my own sprawling world. Like, I feel like it's a fairly common goal in writing, but like I want to create my own language, I want to create my own races, my own species, all that kind of stuff, and linguistics is by far my favorite aspect of all that. And
well, then you'll really be fascinated by this, I think.
All right, and that's The Vast of Night, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to watch that tonight.
Awesome. You have to tell me what you think of it.
I definitely will. Hell yeah, that sounds awesome. So to kind of jump around, I say this every time, I jump around a lot. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
What makes a cosmic horror story effective for you, just to your tastes? And then conversely, what is something that can kind of take you out of it?
I don't know. I guess I haven't really thought about that too much, except to reiterate what I said before about that. I like stories that are subtle and hint at something possibly monstrous behind the curtain, but certainly immense. I'm not going to label Good Night, Sleep Tight, Brian Evanson's new book, as cosmic horror, but I get that feeling from it. It's very disturbing, yet in some ways subtle horror. What can take me out of it? I guess I don't like I don't like campy Lovecraftian stories with, you know, monsters that sound like, you know, or elder beings that sound like Cthulhu,
mm-hmm.
and just the same old, you know, sacrifice to bring the old ones back storyline.
Mm-hmm.
If I came across that, it would really turn me off, I guess, yeah. if that's answering your question.
Yeah, no,
I do very much love subtle horror stories. Like I said, the Night Ocean's a real good example.
Yeah. You know,
I love just discovering more and more and more stories like that.
Yeah. I kind of go through phases as a reader myself, but that seems to be kind of the area I find myself most comfortable in overall. That's generally what I'll never not like a story like that, kind of.
Yeah.
I found a lot of Brian's work is like that. He has kind of mastered it, in my opinion anyway, like that underlying feeling of we as the reader are not being told exactly what's going on, but he's mastered kind of giving us just enough for us to kind of not even paint the rest of the picture for ourselves, but just like, I don't know, just instilling that underlying feeling of like something fucked up is happening here. I don't know what it is, but I know what's happening.
Yeah, as you read the stories, there's this sense of dread that comes over you.
Yeah.
You know, and you're you're just looking through the window, you're being given a small peek of this, whatever's going on in a lot of cases, you know.
Sorry, my cat is there.
Mine gave up. He's asleep on the desk over here.
All my, I wish.
That's how kittens are, man. They either go on at 100% or they crash and sleep for hours.
Yeah, that's, all mine are between the ages of 6 and 8. And so they've all grown up together. And there's one, Diego, he's the second youngest, and he is a third generation Savannah. And he is the glue that holds this monstrous clouder together. So they all just kind of go based on his, like whatever Diego's feeling is what the rest of them are doing. And right now Diego is just woken up and he's feeling like he wants to run around. So, yep. My God. Yeah.
So there they go. Yep.
Yep. So yeah, the last thing I really wanted to ask you is, do you have any, like, what are your plans for the future in terms of the podcast, if any at all? Like, do you want to expand at all? Is there anybody, kind of an easier question to ask, I should say, is who is like your dream guest that you haven't had on, or maybe it's someone you already have had on that is just, you know what I mean?
I don't really get starstruck by people. There's people who I really enjoy talking to, you know, John Langan, Laird Barron, Emma Gibbon. Those are just a few of many names, but they've all been on the show. Someone who hasn't been on the show, you know, I suppose if I attempted, and I will do so, to get, you know, even higher profile guests. I've noticed one thing. It's, you get a lot of attention if you have a horror creative person that's a director of a movie or an actor in a movie, yes. as opposed to, you know, just books don't get as much of attention as movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know that I have a dream person. I mean, Stephen King would always be fun to talk to.
Yeah, open invitation over this way too.
Yeah. I'd love to talk to John Connolly, for one. His Charlie Parker series it is subtle because it's a detective series, but then there's this kind of behind the scenes paranormal stuff going on, which is really cool. I'd love to have Carl Sagan on if he wasn't dead, you know, for quite a while now.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I guess I don't know how to answer that question other than that.
Oh, no, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. John Langan, was on this show last week, and well, his episode's not out yet. But yeah, he was awesome to talk to. Laird was, Laird, I think he was episode 4 of this show, and he was the longest interview I've had to date. And like, it was funny because we talked for like an hour before it, and then he was the longest episode, and then we ended up talking for another like 2 hours after it. I'm just like, this guy just has no shortage of just insane stories. He's such an interesting dude.
Like, and yeah, he is
astonishingly talented.
I have a lot of Patreon-only podcasts, and one of them is from a couple of years ago. Well, Laird and I were talking on the phone. We got on the subject of really strange but true things that have happened to us.
I remember this. I signed up for the Patreon specifically to find that.
Oh, okay. And so I said, we should do an episode on this for the patrons. And he's like, yeah, it's a great idea. And man, the stuff that he recounts happening is just chilling.
Genuinely creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like he said to me, he goes, I don't know that I believe it's paranormal, but if it is, it's scary. And if it's not, it's possibly even scarier.
Yeah.
With what happened.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to know what kind of, I don't want to give it away because it's go to Lovecraft Easing, Google Lovecraft Easing Patreon. And then once you're in, it's only $5 a month. Once you're in, search Laird Barron and you'll find it. But, oh man, remember the You're So Sweet story?
Yes, vaguely.
Yeah, yes. On his intercom and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. People need to go find this.
Yeah.
I'm going to re-sign up and re-listen to that episode. I remember really enjoying it.
Story.
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah. Ah, that's... I want to collate a bunch of real life ghost stories and have people on here and talk about not ghost stories, but like just weird shit stories. Thinking out loud.
No, it's fine.
What was I going to say? I just lost my train of thought. Diego, I know. I'll feed you soon, I promise.
Briefly, you know, I'll talk about the Patreon. It's
please. I was just gonna say, please, if you
thank you.
People can promote you. Where people can find you. Anything you want to promote.
You know, we're on Spotify and Apple and all those places. The podcast is, and if you want to, you know, see us as well as view us, just go to the Lovecraft Easing YouTube channel. And the other big thing I'd say is the Patreon, because as many podcasts as episodes as we put out, the Patreon has a lot of episodes that are not available to the public. And that Laird Barron one is just one example. So I do a deep background series where we talk about kind of the history of their life of the person I'm interviewing. And that's really popular. So
awesome. Oh, yeah. All those links will be in the description for this episode.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Mike, I just want to say thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. And we'll definitely have to have you back on one of these days. I will. You're added to the list of people that I've been dying to talk to more. So thank you truly from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate it, and I know it was a couple years back, but I still am so appreciative that you had me on the your show. That was truly like a peak moment for me, man. That was so fun.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me, and saying all those nice things.
Appreciate Absolutely, it. Man. For sure. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.